Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. I hope everyone's having a good week so far, and I hope you all have a better week ahead. I know, I sound redundant, but I can't help myself. That's one of my favorite things to say. One of them. Hi, Pam. How are you tonight?
Hey, Phil. How's it going?
Well, you know, standard answer. Any better, I'd be twins, you know.
Absolutely.
Right up there with my Twisted Tuesdays. Oh, yeah. Yes.
I used to work with this guy, and I think you would have liked him. He was just like a good old country boy, laid back, great sense of humor. And any time somebody would ask him how he was doing, he'd say, "Finer than frog hair."
There you go. I know that line, too. Yes, I do. When I worked at the nursing home, I got to tell you, there was an older couple. They were in their 90s here. I think they were 95, 96 apiece. And they had just celebrated like their, I don't know, their 50th wedding anniversary or 60th or 70th. I don't know, some huge number that nobody ever hears about. And whenever you went up, you'd say, "Hey, Fred, how you doing today?" He says, "Well, I'm not too bad for a young fella." And I would just fall out laughing, you know. I'd say, "Hey, Fred, how are you today? I'm kicking, but I'm not high." And I would just laugh and I would just smile. And that's exactly what he meant to do, is just give somebody a smile for the day. Yeah, I used to get a kick out. Not too bad for a young fella.
Yeah. That is always
I'll never
good
forget
to have.
You know, I got to tell you, I was 16 when I took care of him. 16.
Oh, wow.
I'm old now. See, that's how much of an impression he made on me. See, it's got me nuts.
Yeah, I know. The funny thing is, some of those, like the old ladies, they can get really sassy. There was one, my sister worked at the same nursing home I did, and this one old lady who was in a wheelchair, for some reason, I can't remember why, no fault of my sister's, just got mad at my sister, and she said, "Lean down towards me so I can slap you in the face."
Yep, I've been in those shoes. I had a woman one time, she came up and she patted my cheek and told me how beautiful I was as she grabbed a hold of my cheek and decided she was going to pinch it just as hard as she could. ooh, it hurts.
Ouch. Ouch.
Yeah. So I get it. I get it. It's a dangerous profession. Anyway,
yep.
Just so you know, I picked Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, Tom. Yeah. How's it going?
How are you?
I'm pretty good, actually. Better than most.
Well, this is good. That's always a good sign.
I wouldn't be any place above average, you know what I mean?
Hey, I go for middle
of the
Yeah, fair to Midland. I can handle fair to Midland.
Absolutely.
I'm not fucking, you know, this side of the grave is pretty good. You know.
Oh, it's where most of the action takes place, that's for sure.
Amen. Amen. Amen to that. Oh, my God. That was funny. Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So, anyhow. Oh, gosh. I don't know. I'm just here for the beer.
Pam, you brought the beer, right?
I absolutely did. Foreign and domestic.
Okay. As long as you didn't drink it all, we're good.
All right. No,
yeah,
I got
a
12-pack
really nice
for me and a 12-pack for everyone else.
Oh, there you go. Well, you greedy.
Actually, beer is honestly one of those things I'm really picky about. I was telling Victoria about this before. I'm as picky about beer as some people are about their wine or other things. You know, I will buy beer less often so I can buy the $10 six pack or the, you know, $12 six pack rather than say like the Coors Light, because I like my darker beers, my beers that actually have flavor rather than being piss water.
I'm with you 100%. Do you ever go touring and try out different people's versions of dark beers?
Yep.
Well, you guys can have all the beer. I just want the gin and grapefruit juice, so we're all good. I'm no competition.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
I even know a vodka that's so smooth it tastes like water. It just doesn't have that effect.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. Well, vodka is okay for me, but it's not like, I don't know. It's not one of the best things for me. But I definitely like me some gin. I don't know. My favoritist. It's my favoritist. Yeah. Icy cold with a lot of grapefruit juice. I'm a happy girl. Yep.
Nice.
So Pam, tell us all about your prompts.
Well, my first confession is that I have never fully read Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Not that long.
You have read it?
I've read the whole thing, yeah, twice.
Oh, cool.
Only takes an afternoon to read the whole thing. Come on. It's not that long.
All right. Well, here's the reason. Okay, so the reason I never read the full thing, and not a really good excuse, but I think it's somewhat of one, is the fact that it was my mother's book, and I was 9 years old when I was trying to, like 9 years or under when I was trying to read it.
Well,
so,
you know, then it would be a long book.
Yeah, so I think what I would like to do, because I happened to, while searching for prompts, come across this, Jonathan Livingston Seagull was written in the 1970s by Richard Bach. And it was presented as a self-help philosophical book, and it actually was a book that got a lot of criticism and wasn't, like, at first warmly received. It's kind of one of those books that if you know it and you've even read, like, even having only read it at a very young age, and part of it might be nostalgia for me because I remember sitting on my mother's bed with that book right at her reading table and always picking it up and reading little parts of it. But even having read little parts of it at such a young age, its words really made an impact on me. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask Tom if he has anything he'd like to offer up.
Jonathan
Livingston Seagull, yeah, in the book.
I remember when it first came out and everybody was it was like everybody was raging about it the same, you know, in the same way sort of like they did about The Graduate, which meant immediately I didn't want to read it. I was part of the early cynical of the adolescent period. And, you know, you think you're very original and unique in your cynicism, but you're just like everybody else. You just aren't old
enough
to realize that yet. And I finally sat down and read it. And when I was in college, and it was delightful. It was taking it from one angle, it's so positive that if you're cynical, it makes you feel like the world just ain't that good, and this just can't be true. If you're past that point of cynicism and you're looking for something that gives you a window on a way of thinking that will allow you to get past your own negative bullshit, it's a great support.
Absolutely. And even, like, the thing is, when I came across the book and I thought of the ideas of grabbing the quotes for the contest, I thought these are quotes that we're going to get a lot of really good positive rights. And I have to say, Phil and Tom, we definitely did, at least in my opinion. Yes. So.
Awesome.
All right. So if we're ready, I'm going to start us out with an intro read, which is actually going to be a short excerpt from Jonathan Livingston Seagull. So I'll go ahead and give this a read. And it goes like this. No limits. Fletcher turned to his instructor, and there was a moment of fright in his eye. Me? Leading? What do you mean, me leading? You're the instructor here. You can't leave. Couldn't I? Don't you think that there might be other flocks, other Fletchers that need an instructor more than this one that's on its way toward the light? Me, Jonathan, I'm just a plain seagull, and you're, Jonathan sighed and looked out to sea. You don't need me any longer. You need to keep finding yourself a little more each day, that real, unlimited Fletcher seagull. He's your instructor. You need to understand him and to practice him. A moment later, Jonathan's body wavered in the air, shimmering, and began to go transparent. Don't let them spread silly rumors about me or make me a god. Okay, Fletch? I'm a seagull. I like to fly. Maybe. Jonathan, poor Fletch, don't believe what your eyes are telling you. All they show is limitation. Look with your understanding. Find out what you already know, and you'll see the way to fly. The shimmering stopped. Jonathan Seagull had vanished into empty air. After a time, Fletcher Gull dragged himself into the sky and faced a brand new group of students eager for their first lesson. To begin with, he said heavily, you've got to understand that a seagull is an unlimited idea of freedom, an image of a great gull. And your whole body from wingtip to wingtip is nothing more than your thought itself. The young gulls looked at him quizzically. Hey, man, they thought, this doesn't sound like a rule for a loop. Fletcher sighed and started over. Very well, he said, and eyed them critically. Let's begin with level flight. In saying that, he understood all at once that his friend had quite honestly been no more divine than Fletcher himself. And suddenly, he tried to look properly severe for his students. Fletcher Seagull suddenly saw them all as they were, just for a moment, and he more than likely loved what it was he saw. No limits, Jonathan, he thought, and he smiled. His face, his race to learn had begun. End excerpt. All right. And, well, it's obviously not a poem, but I do think that was definitely worth reading, obviously, as the intro for the show. And, Tom, your thoughts?
Oh, it's delightful because it really focuses upon the idea that we are as we create ourselves. And that when we're a teacher, what we really have to realize is our biggest job is allowing other people, the ones that are quote-unquote our students, the opportunity to see themselves and realize there's no limit to their possibilities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Yeah, it did have that nice feel to it, of the no limit to possibility. But I also liked the humor in it, especially near the end, with the kind of realization that his instructor was no more godlike than he is. You know, it's just... really quite, as you said, delightful. And Jean, your thoughts?
God, unless you want me to think too, Thomas. Something's just not right about it all. You know, considering I'm not familiar with the book, and I'm not familiar with the story, and I'm not really familiar at all, I thought it was captivating to a good extent. It kind of brings you into the thoughts of the book, I assume, because, you know, if it's an excerpt, it must be what it does. And I think that it was clever and really, you know, it was just a nice job. It kind of would pique my interest enough to have me continue on reading, if I had time to read at this stage. But someday,
I completely get that. Yep, and then I was happy to have found an excerpt, because I thought, there's just no way that I'm going to be able to say, hey, Phil, for the beginning of the show, I'm going to read a book that will take me the whole 2 hours to read.
I hear you.
Right. Yeah. That idea would not have flied.
Nope. It wouldn't have flied at all. But that's all right.
Definitely, people would have.
Plenty of. My mother would say it went over like a lead balloon.
Exactly.
Yep. No.
I'll go ahead and bring us on to the poetry. And up first we have Keep Working on Love by Neutron Bomb. And Tom, will you give that a read for us, please?
I'd be happy to. Keep Working on Love. And I'm going to open with the epigraph she's got here in front. To Jonathan, he said, and these were the last words he spoke, keep working on love. End quote. Soaring into unknown territory, an adolescent wedge-tail eagle dies in the eddy currents thrown off commercial towers that line the central business district, picking off a rotund pigeon to feed off of in the confines of the mechanical plant room. Feathers and offal are projected past window panes as office goers furiously scribble on tablets, burying themselves in bird shit to avoid the pit of impending nothingness that await their arrival at home. A bed sit with a stark kitchenette, void of warmth. Cookie cutter furniture from a bargain warehouse adorns the flat. A table for one, dinner for one. End poem.
Great read there, Tom. Thank you, Neutron, for this write. I tell you, she really just has some of the most hard-hitting poetry. And I always liked how she manages to take a different approach. While it is a positive quote, there's also kind of a certain sense of loneliness that reminds, and I think for me anyways, her poem reminds me, makes me think about how truly far all of us have to go to work on love, especially when we get so absorbed in online, conversations, debates, how we, everything becomes so mechanical. It's interesting to me how the life form, the life within here, a rotund pigeon and a young adolescent wedge-tailed eagle are all part of an area that is, you know, all about, you know, tall towers, businesses, work, and I don't know, I get the idea of kind of a dying off of innocence. Really, to me, I always feel like her metaphors are quite layered. I did like the lines in the end, void of warmth, cookie cutter furniture from a bargain warehouse, dorm flat, table for one, dinner for one. I like the fact that Neutron, with her poetry, especially with lines like that, can create emotion without telling you what emotion you're supposed to be feeling. Like, you know, the very image of somebody at a table for one evokes that feeling of feeling sad, of feeling, you know, as if, you know, the loneliness in that moment just grabs a hold of you. And Tom, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, you look at the opening, especially in light of the epigraph, soaring into unknown territory, the great opening line for Keep Working on Love. And she gives us a young eagle trying hard to survive in a world where nature has been basically destroyed. But he picks off a fat pigeon and ends up feeding on it in the confines of a mechanical plant room. And that's all pretty straightforward. And then he makes the transformation, in a sense, because all of a sudden this becomes about the people who work in offices who have put themselves in a position where they are really the fodder of so many eagles who fly above them. And so they're furiously scribbling on tablets, burying themselves in bird shit to avoid the pits of an impending nothingness. And now, if love is about sharing, if love is about taking flight, but love is about something that you create, they're not creating it. And because they're not creating it, all they have when they get home is a bedsit with a star kitchenette, void of warmth, cookie cutter furniture from a bargain warehouse, doors of flat, a table for one, dinner for one.
Absolutely.
Flip their wings and I've got nothing left.
Yeah. Well, definitely well said there, Tom. And Dean, your thoughts?
I keep telling you about expecting me to think. There's a problem with that. I thought this was really well expressed and, a great expression of thought. Her imagery in this piece draws us in even further into the actual, the solitude of the end, the ending. And I think that it was just a great piece. So excellent work, Neutron, and thank you so much.
Absolutely. And let me go ahead and grab the next poem and put up. All right. Up next is Spread My Wings by Martha Gettle. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
I sure will. God, I'm used to Martha having a sound cloud on everything.
Yeah, I know, right?
Unusual.
The nerve of her. No more kidding. Only kidding. Okay. Let's see, this is Spread My Wings by Martha Gettle. I was looking out my window today. I saw a little bluebird, saw him fly away. And as I watched his wings fill the air, I couldn't help but stare. And I wished, oh, how I wished he was me, that I was the one there flying free. I got an urge to change my life today. I long like the bird, I long to fly away. Spread my wings and lift up to the sky. Tell all the misery of this, tell it all goodbye. Spread my wings and be the me I was when I was free. That little bird is long gone, and I'm tired of just holding on. But I still see that little blue speck in my mind as he disappeared into the sky. Spread my wings and lift me high in the sky. Spread my wings high to the sky. Spread my wings and watch me fly away. Spread my wings and let me be on my way. End of poem.
Great, Eugene. And I have to say, I think this was just absolutely beautiful. I really appreciated and enjoyed the sing-song quality of it. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, her prompt number 11 is the gull sees farthest, who flies highest. I was really curious as to what motivated this. She uses a beautiful conceit in her structure, the repetition, which almost becomes towards the end the flapping of wings. And she uses it in a really thoughtful, deliberate fashion so that we find, or at least I find, the emphasis of the repetition to deepen the meaning and to pull me in so that I become caught up in how she's going to reawaken herself, become that little bird all over again with the sense of joy and excitement and determination that she had when she was young. And I thought the ending, to spread my wings, spread the wings, and lift me high in the sky, spread my wings high to the sky. Spread my wings and watch me fly away. Spread my wings and let me be on my way. Was perfect for the ending. Delightful piece.
It really was, and you're right. The very purposeful, repetitive use of spread my wings, and was very much like, I like how you described it as like as if the wings of a bird flapping, and it did have that wonderful quality to it. I like that she went with a bluebird. I don't know, it made me think of Bukowski's "There's a Bluebird Inside Me." So I really felt it worked. You know, yeah, on that level, it was kind of like taking a little bit of a, like, the gentler side of Bukowski approach. And I really liked the philosophy in this.
There's also, you mentioned the bluebird, given her age and mine, Shirley Temple's Bluebird of Happiness.
Oh, okay, yeah, that will be another, yeah, great reference. Yep. Yeah, I can't
tell my only Bluebird of Happiness reference because that wouldn't be right tonight. I'm sorry. No, I don't know one saying about it. Mm-hmm. The Bluebird
right?
of Happiness.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I gotta
find that little bird. So you read that wonderfully, Jean. Your thoughts.
Thanks, and you don't want to know what I would do with the Bluebird of Happiness when I got my paws on them. Just saying. I think this was really a nice piece done by Martha. I like the lyrical quality the same as you did, Pam, and I thought it was very nicely done. I also enjoyed the reference to the bluebird. It lightened it up some. Around here, we don't have any real bodies of water around here, but we have plenty of seagulls.
They will travel really far for McDonald's French fries, I tell you.
I think that's really it, because there's like really no other reason for them to be there. They must have seen the Golden Arches and just pulled in. I don't know. But there really are many of them that flutter around here. And I'm like, why are you here? You guys take a wrong turn? But So the Bluebird was a nice change up to make. I liked it. I think that Martha did a really good job, and I thought it went well with the prompt. So nice work, Martha. I should behave myself and stop joking. I don't want people to get offended.
I like your joke.
You can be somebody else.
Hey, right, isn't that the truth? Yes, yes. Good point, Thomas. Good point.
Yeah, well, everyone.
Exactly. And, yeah, when I used to live near Lake Superior, there was obviously a lot of seagulls around there. You'd go to the
really?
Park in Duluth. So, yeah, the what?
Well, I didn't say anything, Pam.
Oh,
but we have
I must say, you know, sometimes I think my voice echoes back to me. And I think it's you or you're somebody who has a – like, I never think – it. Like, when I hear, like, an echo voice back, I obviously never think, oh, that must be Tom or, you know, that must be Lawrence or Rex because they never sound like me. But sometimes – all right. Up next we have At the Edge of It All, a narrative by – Just Mike, and it goes like this. I traveled well on the wings of my own shoulders into the vacuum and dragged my fingers through galaxies. This body of mine permeated clouds both nebular and wild, and hydrogen soaked my pores. In gaseous giants, I birthed farms, and wailing dwarfs, I footed houses. My feet have skirted suns and padded moons, but I was nothing to myself. When dark matter slithered into my coat sleeves. There was a moment I caught the hair of a comet and held on to her as her strings carried me far from black holes. She dragged me smiling through planetary rings and supernova debris, guided my hand along space dust pillars, and placed fields of light upon my temples. But hers was a curved path. When her hair frosted and cracked, she swerved, and I hurtled on while reaching for her strands. I traveled still, but felt nothing like the reflection of a star off her frozen face upon that moon she settled. So I traveled farther at the end of it all. I carried myself to where time ceased and darkness parted, when the last star faded and nothing remained. Space itself lost color. The universe has a horizon, and I glided past it. There's a door at the break that leads to another realm, pink to some, gray to others. I tell you now I stood before it. I tell you I grabbed the bloody handle. I crossed the threshold into white nothing. I skated surfaces of velvet unknown, and I found him. He, at the edge of it all, he in white button shirt and black trousers, he with red suspenders and black bow tie, he a watchman, behind a walnut counter, glass in hand, wiping it with a towel, under gravelly bifocals that complemented his sandy hair. I approached the counter, traveled down and wary. He looked up, a smile across his face, his eyes made of swirling stars. He asked me, what'll you have? To tell you truthfully, smile crossed my face too. And poem. And that is, I haven't read a lot of Just Mike. He's fairly new to entering my contest. So I have to say I really liked this, and I was glad to see that it had made a front page pick because it definitely was well deserved of that. And I think this is going to be an interesting one to hear people's thoughts on. So let's start with you, Tom.
Well, it's really a nice extended metaphor, and it's a well-handled extended metaphor. I like the way that he brought the girl in and described her as a comet and left her building her home on the moon. I like how when he finally came to the end of eternity or the universe or however you want to describe that and came face-to-face with God, he did it in a familiar, mildly humorous, straightforward way, that said everything he had to say and perhaps even more. But he asked me, what do you have? And to tell you truthfully, a smile crossed my face too. Stunning ending. I was utterly delighted all the way through.
Absolutely. And, like you said, it really grabs your attention and keeps your attention. And it's a wonderful extended metaphor. Oh, my gosh, I'm blanking out. I was trying to type the telephone number for the show and at the same time as commenting, and apparently that's not going to be happening, so I won't do that. I was going to put in the room. You got it. Okay.
I got it.
I wanted to put in the room that readers and commenters were welcome since we could use a... All right. All right. So now I will focus on commenting and on Tom's comment. But I like how you mentioned it was a well-handled extended metaphor. And what made it particularly impressive is the length of the poem. Mike did message me and ask, you know, because I think I usually say up to 350, give or take a few, and I'm pretty lenient with that. And he's like, is 388 too much? And I said, no, that's fine. Then the thing is, though, the longer you go with a poem, and, of course, a lot of this is me personally, is, you know, I don't have the best attention span. So if you're going to go with a longer poem, make it something that grabs my attention and keeps my attention. And this one does nice. Do that, and it does it like as you mentioned, Tom, because it's so well executed. And it's interesting how he brings in the woman, and I almost feel like the woman in herself was a metaphor for, like, the universe. And it really added, like, there was that point where he's talking about the curves of her path, and you really start thinking, you know, this has a nice touch of sensuality to it. It's almost as if the sensual connection between man, woman, between people in the universe was all part of the journey. There was a few lines there where I started thinking, maybe this is a Wednesday night, right? But then it really got into that kind of the idea of crossing that boundary into the spiritual and facing God. And I like how he made the deity, the God-like figure, someone who seemed like that friendly person that would run the local bookstore, the used book. And I like that there was that question, what will you have? And I know you brought that up, Tom, because I felt like that question made the whole idea that your spiritual journey is your own. And the question is, you know, what will you have as your reward? Not, you know, this is what heaven is like, and this is, you know, what you get, you know.
What will you create?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so just an excellent write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
I actually read this not long after it was written. It was on our reading list. And I found it to be intriguing. When I started to read it, it reminded me of time travel and, a journey of sorts through the universe. And I could kind of get myself lost in that kind of thing. Like, you know, not Doctor Who, but kind of Doctor Who-ish. And I was kind of getting that softer. And it was, I was kind of into it. And then when it came to the end, there was like a twist at the end because, you know, you approach the counter, you know. And he looked up, and smiled across his face, and made a swirling thing, you know, what do you have? And to tell you truthfully, a smile crossed my face, too. And I thought that was, like, a really cool ending for this. And what I said to Mike at the time was, I love this piece, Mike, and I said, thanks for taking me on the journey with you. I enjoyed the shift at the end, and I thought he did an excellent job with it. And I honestly did. It kind of had this one vibe that ran through, and all of a sudden, it just changed. It wasn't dramatic or totally drastic because of the way he did. He finessed it very well. And I think that it was just a shift. It wasn't like a jack-in-the-box jumping up and scaring you. It wasn't like a totally wild concept at the end, you know, some dark secret hidden in the mix of it. It was just really nicely done. So thank you, Mike. I'm glad to see that you know, you put it in the contest. Really good. He must have put it up on the reading list as soon as he finished writing it, because, you know, it seemed like it was a couple weeks ago, but 1 week will do.
Right. Right. I know. Nice. I remember seeing it, too. I actually, because I don't try not to comment on poems before shows.
Right.
So, but, you know, it's not that there's anything against it. That's just me. But I like how you described the shift as gentle and not a jack-in-the-box jump.
Mm-hmm.
Just a nice gentle shift that pulls you into another thought. So.
Right. You know, sometimes at the end when people do a shift like that, it's more of an abrupt change. And this wasn't. It just kind of just flowed over. It's like water. It flowed into something else. That's kind of
it. It felt really appropriate given the mysticism he brought about. But the, you know, the way he described the comment as the girl and stuff like that, it stayed within the genre and within the whole setup of the piece, even as he went in a totally different direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Well said there. And All right. That was definitely an excellent write. And up next we have Reflection by Gerald E. Green. And we do have a recording for that one, so whenever you're ready, Phil.
Okie dokie.
Reflection, written and read by Gerald Green. Others crafted who you were, using hands deformed with raw, unbridled energy, forming in a cloud of ignorance. Children have no choice, are forced by circumstance, pushed by random words and winds of turbulence. As a teen, you pushed against elastic walls, strengthened muscles, bided time, and sought escape. One day you forced the door to freedom, uncertain of its willingness for one more entry. At that moment, you began crafting yourself from an awkward position, with fire all could see. Now you have become who you want to be. In the mirror is the real thing, the true image of who you are. External forces buffet stalks of grain, but roots hold firm, allowing growth amid the storm where challenges beat down the weak. But you have persevered. Let nothing stand in your way, seizing what can be seized, making the most of each new day. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Gerald. Always appreciative of the recordings. And just remind everyone, if you write for our shows and you cannot call in, the making a recording is the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And I really like how he takes us through that cycle that of growth in life from childhood on. And then, you know, the opening to me, I really spoke like about how, you know, how we are formed with other people by other people's ideas of what we should be, you know, and of course, you know, obviously there's a lot of parents who have a very good intention, but we all have this idea of, you know, what we want our child to be, what we want our child to be, what we want them to believe. And so, you know, we go about trying to mold them. And you know, to me, I really like how this, in really nice, straightforward language, shows the breaking away. There was some really nice visceral language in here, like using hands to form with raw, unbridled energy. And as a teen, you pushed against elastic walls, strengthening muscles, bided time, and sought escape. You know, it's almost like, to me, that it almost like had that idea that as a teen and a young adult, you're focused on the outward strength. And then as you mature into an adult, you start to look more inwards, that inward mirror that shows, you know, where your strength truly lies. I thought this was just a wonderful, thought-provoking write all the way through and beautifully written and very well done. And Tom, your thoughts?
hotel. He did a really nice job of taking the journey through life and how we develop in it, and using a great sense, a set of words to describe the struggle. And in what appears to be a straightforward way, but if you stop thinking about it, he really was using sort of a subtle system of metaphors pushed by random words and winds of turbulence. Well, wind of turbulence is definitely a metaphor. It's a simile of a type. As a teen, you pushed against elastic walls, strengthened muscles, bided time, and sought escape. And then when you get down to where he talks about an adult and those that survive versus those that don't, external forces buffet stalks of grain, but roots hold firm. Metaphor again. Allowing growth amid the storm. Another metaphor. Where challenges beat down the weak. I don't say this to make light of it. I say this because there are very subtle and strong ways to use metaphor in a really dynamic fashion, which creates both a vibrance and an energy within the piece, but also an appearance of clarity that draws people in, and all of a sudden they find themselves thinking about what's being said because its apparent obviousness leads you to discover how subtle it really is. And then when he comes to that last verse, but you have persevered. Are you that person? Let nothing stand in your way, seizing what can be seized, making the most of each new day. That resolution that is so strong there in the end leaves the reader in a poignant place, having to reflect back upon themselves and their own success or lack thereof. Really, a really stunning piece and very good use of clarity and the obvious to craft a very subtle thought.
Yeah, I like that you brought that up about the subtlety of it, and then the energy that it brought to the poem. I do think that's kind of a good thing to focus on. It is how cleverly the subtleness of it is woven in, and really does make you think. Definitely.
Well, there's a lot for adults to learn, and part of learning is trying to understand what's actually going on and what's actually happening, and that always fascinates me.
Oh, definitely, and part of learning is obviously just, always having an open mind to, everything that's happening in the poem, all the potential that's out there. So definitely, like I said, we are having some good quality writes tonight. And up next, I have put Light of Faith by Damn It Dave. And Tom, will you give that a read for us, please?
Oh, certainly. Light of Faith by Damn It Dave. When standing at the door that leads to darkness, the whispers of your heart say, it's okay. It tells you just to disregard this darkness. The beacon of your faith will lead the way. It doesn't mean that you will never falter, but confidence will keep you on the trail, though interfering shadows haunt and halter. Believe and trust that you will never fail. The rock of faith is sturdy and tenacious. It gives you strength to look gloom in the eye and though the dark can often be vexatious, faith says that you can do it if you try. And Paul.
Great read there, Tom. I have to say, I always enjoy Dan and Dave's poetry. A wonderful spot on rhyme and meter. And I like that he writes about faith and in a realistic way. Especially in that second stanza. It doesn't mean that you will never falter, but confidence will keep you on the trail. Though interfering shadows haunt and halter, believe and trust that you will never fail. I like the idea that, you will get there in the end to where you're meant to be. You just have to have faith, but don't expect that the path is going to be an easy one. Really nice flow here. The rock of faith is sturdy and tenacious. I like that line. It gives you strength to look gloom in the eye. Sometimes, and I like that, I like the use of the word gloom and the idea that to me the gloom can be, things that are going on around you, or they can be things that are going on inside you. And then just to be able to have the courage, the strength and the fortitude to just, face them and move forward. So just an excellent write and very well done. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, if we are the ones that create meaning, then we are the question seeking an answer. And he brings forward a way of acting and a way of guiding those actions that allow us to have the opportunity to speak. And, I like the opening. When standing at the door that leads to darkness, friends of your heart say, it's okay. That's a great opening because all of us, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, have to start in ignorance and find a path, and that and to start there is both an invitation to the reader and understanding of where we all have begun. And I like the simplicity, I like the forthrightness, and the ability to use the poetry. It just delights me as somebody who can use rhyme and meter to say what they want to say in a way that supports, where the craft supports them, rather than feeling like it was running them over. And he does an excellent job in that. This reads so cleanly and nicely that when you get to the end, you almost want to cheer. It's very well done.
Absolutely. Well said there. And I'd like to welcome Kel to the show. Welcome, Kel. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
It's going good. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, no worries. Better late than never. Always good to hear you.
Thank you.
All right. And did you get a chance to read or to hear Dammit Dave's poem?
Yes, I did. And I agree. I totally agree with Tom. I like the simplicity of the message he's got in here. It's got a lot of strength and self-empowerment. It's just really, really well written, very well done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. All right. Up next, we have Magical Dreams by Betty Page. And Kel, will you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. Magical Dreams. Magical Dreams. No hesitation, just be who you truly are. Free, be your true self. Fly high, so carefree. Embrace colorful rainbows, cotton candy clouds. Just live out your dreams and choose seashell pink or sky blue. Life is up to you. Fly down on moonbeams. Dance in sweet, spectacular, magical starlight. Ride High Ocean Waves, Adventure in Blue Tide Pools, Cascading Waters, Run in Green Meadows, Pick Wild Delicate Flowers, Crown Yourself with Love. Royal kings and queens stare deep into dark blue skies lit by silver stars. Neath strawberry moon, shimmering so mystical, embrace life's magic. Live out your best dreams. Create your own universe. Be a shining star. No hesitation. Just be who you truly are. Free. Be your true self. Fly high, so carefree. Embrace colorful rainbows, cotton candy clouds. Just live out your dreams in seashell pink or sky blue. Life is up to you. End poem.
Great read, Kel. I have to say, I think this one is just absolutely beautiful. I always like how, even though she has a similar style, and most times it's like her wonderfully short, like 5-7-5 lines, oftentimes. I feel like there's so many times we get to see the true diversity of Betty, and this is in particular is one of those kind of pieces that I just really enjoy. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I like this one because this doesn't get into her sensuality or her rather wicked wit, or even her playfulness. This is about the most philosophical I've seen Betty ever get, but it's done with a sense of her love for color, her love for fantasy, and her love for the way the world is here to greet you and take you with it to places that you can only begin to imagine. Neath strawberry moon, shimmering so mystical, embrace life's magic. Or run in green meadows, pick wild delicate flowers, crown yourself with love. I mean, it just goes on forever, and she does it so well. It was great fun.
Absolutely, Evelyn, you're right. She does have that kind of imagery that takes you to almost a dreamlike land. And really beautiful. And Kel, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. I like the lighthearted imagery she put into it. The beautiful colors, the soft and gentle, but it also has a mystical, magical feel to it that just, you know, that's just really empowering and strong. You know, it's a very beautiful write.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, just delightful imagery. Embrace colorful rainbows, cotton candy clouds. What I like is this is just such a beautiful and gentle reminder to, you know, live life to the fullest, and it almost pays a tribute to the idea of living, using your imagination constantly, that idea of just allowing yourself to be transported, neath strawberry moon, shimmering so mystical, embrace life's magic. I always like the use of the strawberry moon because in the Native American moons, the strawberry moon is the June one, which is my birth month. So, you know, I can't help but, get a smile on my face when I see a poem that references the strawberry moon. Really delightful and creative imagery and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Hello, hello, hello. I know you all missed me. God, I was trying really hard. Aesthetic was making me crazy, and thanks for asking me, because I thought maybe it was just me. I thought this was a great piece by Betty. I thought the imagery was really well done. And you know what my remark was to her was beautiful work. Emotions were well expressed, and make each day count, each minute, each moment, because really that's what defines our lives. They're the important things. And I thought it was really well done with great imagery throughout.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, well said there. And thank you. Thank you for killing the static.
very much appreciated.
Wait till I tell you what it was.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know. I always kind of picture you holding like a spear, like some Viking warrior woman. So I figured whatever you did, it involved a spear.
I'm just the goddess Athena. Let it be at that. Standing at the gates of Olympus.
Well, that's what it's the real truth now. You're stuck with that image. Damn.
Right?
What do you think about me around here? Scary. Scary, scary.
All right. Well, up next we have Remember When by J.C. Anders. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
I'm sorry, I have static. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, right.
Got to find it. Okay. Well, she came to me about the static. I didn't make up stories. Okay.
Telling me about
Did science. You hear that? Did you hear that? Oh, my
I
God.
I hear it.
That's crazy. Okay.
It
I'm
might be
trying to get through this.
It's the government phone that gives me a lot of a really hard time with static and stuff. I apologize.
No, it's not you, Kel. It's not you. It was happening before you called in.
Okay,
this is called Remember When by J.C. Anders. What if this chaos gripping you isn't quite what it is, and the life you now live is only a murky dream, and tomorrow feels a million years away, sometimes exposing yesterday as the dark silhouette it is, which never really leaves? Could we ever leap forward while wrapped uncomfortably within the world's invisible chains, knowing our story will end with a whimper 6 feet under as gray, decayed delicacies from bulging eyed gray worms, salted with disintegrating memories? And it's the times like these when we feel we can't breathe to learn to love and smile again, remembering the wonder and innocence of childhood and where we once were. And the phone.
Wonderful read there, Jean. I have to say, I'm always glad to see JC in the for writing for the shows and contests. He's got a wonderful like style that's all his own, and I really like how this one shows some of the bitterness and ugliness of the world. But then reminds us that it's in those difficult times that we have to reach back into that to that inner child and find that process of loving and finding joy again. Kel, let's get your thoughts.
Well, I like the. It seems to be questioning more than stating a true message. It's questioning. What if this chaos gripping you isn't quite what it seems? And it continues all the way through. It's like one continuous query about, how our lives are going and, how it seems to be and everything. And then, at the end, what if it could be like what was when we were children and everything was innocent and wonder and we're just curious about everything. And I think that's a really wonderful way to write this, because we all wonder what's going to happen next, if we're going to make it through all this, especially with all this crap that's been going on. And it's just, I really appreciate the way he wrote this. It's beautiful.
Absolutely. And I have to agree with you. I'm glad you brought that up, how it has kind of a questioning nature to it, because I think by writing it in that way, it does provide us with the opportunity to think and learn along with the poet and their inner workings. So that was well said there. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I like how he goes in the beginning that we spend our time looking at the past or the future, and we're caught up in trying to make sense of it, sometimes exposing yesterday as a dark silhouette it is, which never really leaves. So So we're both shattered by our past as we are, you know, concerned about our future. But could we ever leap forward while wrapped uncomfortably? And then he goes into depth and the fact that when we're there, there's nothing except maybe salted with disintegrating memories. And it's times like these when we're confronting both how we can't deal with what's going on and our past is running over us, where we feel we can't breathe, that we need to learn to love and smile again, remembering the wonder and innocence of childhood and what we once were, that we have everything we need if we're willing and available to allow ourselves to use it, which I think is a wonderful thought, especially since he doesn't do it by being preachy or telling you this is what you've got to do. He just offers that as an opportunity, because all it ever is an opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. I like that. You know, like you said, it's not preachy. It's just an offered opportunity. Take it or leave it. But it's offered. So, yeah, definitely excellent comment and a wonderful write. And I'd like to welcome Dexter to the show. Welcome, Dexter. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Hi,
Dexter. Hey, glad I could make it. Hopefully everybody is well.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And did you get a chance to read JC's poem?
I did. And I liked it quite a bit, and I liked what Tom had to say. And there's kind of parts, too, where you know, it kind of made it seem like almost like it was coaxing you back almost from taking your own life. You know, how many times has it been where it's been such a horrible day and you think, you know, in your mind you're going, God, this is the worst thing ever. And all of a sudden the next day you get a phone call or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, you know, if you can just hold on to that next day, things seem to like all of a sudden start to pan themselves out. And all of a sudden it doesn't seem like it was that bad.
Exactly.
And in this way, it almost offers up a way to hold on for another day, you know, and to be able to see that point. I don't know. That was just kind of my interpretation. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. That was my week. I don't go into personal details about my life, but I have had the kind of week where not obviously suicidal, but where, you know, I had these heavy burdens. And I carried them, and then they were lifted, you know. So I totally, when you were talking about that, Dexter, I was like, I totally relate to that. I've
yeah.
felt that this past week. So excellent comment. And great comments, everybody. And let's go ahead and move on to the next write. And... Tom, I want you to read your poem now.
She's bossy tonight, man. Bossy, bossy. Bossy.
That's
the
a good
cat.
Time to stall.
Right. All right.
He's playing hard to get, Pam.
He's playing hard to get. Tom, I have put your poem up. Would you like to read it for us, please? Well, now, where did Tom go to?
Oh, I'm sorry. I muted. I apologize.
Okay. I was like, man, he just went running.
Yeah, okay. Now, the past is finished. A lesson to learn. A book read too often. The future is a probability. We search for guarantees, buy warranties, end up poorer because we cannot accept what is given. All creation can only take place in the present. It is the moment of birth. Here is where we stand shoulder to shoulder with God. Miracles spring forth. Clarity makes the obvious sublime. We see clearly the path. All else is possible, but clearly not the path. You can only ask, are you willing to walk? How shall you walk? What is worth creating that isn't created with love? Ready?
Great read time.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had trouble with my mute button there. That wonderful read there, Tom. Oh, my goodness. But, you know, I have to say, when I created this contest, I thought, Tom will write for this one. These will be prompts that will track Tom. And it was simply not because I thought you had read Jonathan Livingston Seagull, although I wouldn't, you know, but it was just this idea that in these prompts, to me, was a sense of seeking a better self. And I just, you know, I have to say that, yeah, like when I, as I said, when I put this contest together, you were one of the people I thought, you know, it's like, if you build it, they will come. And
that's a great compliment. Thank you.
And so I'm glad you wrote for the contest and for the show. And Dexter, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah, this was quite a write. And you know, it touches on a lot of angles here. You know, the past is finished, a lesson to learn, a book read too often. You know, we can spend a lot of time of the now focusing on the past. You know, a lot of people do, you know, worry and things like worrying is going to change anything about the future and things. And, you know, it's very easy to waste the now on thinking about the future, or, you know, on worrying and also just kind of reshuffling the past like it's going to change anything. And clarity makes an obvious sublime. I think that just kind of knowing a little about you, I think that maybe retirement has also kind of helped bring some clarity to this, because I feel like maybe once you reach a certain age, you really know the importance of a minute and know the importance of now and enjoying it and creating within it. And so I thought that this was a great write, Tom.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well said there, Dexter. And your thoughts, Kel?
Well, I totally agree with this whole thing. What's past is past. You know, you can't look back and, you know, hope things will get better, because, you know, you can't change it. There's no way you can change anything that's already happened. All creation can only take place in the present. It is the moment of birth. And, yes, it terrifies us, you know, because we don't know what's going to happen next. There's no way of knowing how our lives are going to turn out, or, you know, what's going to hold us. You know, clarity makes the obvious sublime. We see clearly the path. Else, all else is possible, but clearly not the path, which is also very true. You know, because we don't know what path to take until we actually get to it and we decide which way to go. And that is very well stated in this whole thing. It's a very beautiful write, Tom.
Well,
very
thank
insightful.
You.
Absolutely. Well said there, Kel. And, you know, I really like how you have this message of moving forward, of not always staying in the past. And I like, all creation can only take place in the present. It is the moment of birth. It terrifies us. And it's true, the idea oftentimes of moving forward, the idea of making any sort of change, you know, even ones that are good can be absolutely terrifying. And I like how you have the question at the end, are you ready? You know, the idea that, you know, you eventually have to go forward and you have to ask yourself. You can only ask, are you willing to walk? You know, once the path is clear and it's there, you know, you just, the only question is, are you willing to do your part? So just an excellent write all the way through, Tom, and very well done.
Well, and
Jean. Sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I was going to ask
you. Know, Tom, I really like,
thought you'd like to.
Yeah, I do. I really like this write because I believe in that hearing now thing. You know, I thought, it's an excellent right because here and now, that's the most important places to be, you know, living in the present. You know, the reason the windshield is larger than the rear view is because it's not about what's behind us that matters, it's what lies ahead. And you can't keep moving forward if you're, you know, not living in the present, pretty much. You know, you have to keep moving forward. You know, you can't worry about 9 miles ahead of you either, you know. It's like here, now, and that's how you get by. And I think that's an excellent representation of that, your poem. It's a nice job, Tom.
Absolutely.
Oh. This is truly the stripped-down version of all this. I mean, well, if you've been an athlete and, you know, and I was a jock amongst other things when I was in school, there are points where all of a sudden you are so in tune with what's happening right now that everything becomes clear. As basketball players call it, when you're in the zone, the basket seems like it's huge and everything's going to go through. A quarterback will tell you playing football that suddenly they know where everybody is on the field and exactly when to throw the ball to get it exactly where they want it to be. And that's what I mean by the path is obvious. Everything else is, you know, you can do it, but it's just not the path. It's not right. Not that anything else is wrong. It's just not right. and it lets you see when everything is exactly as it's supposed to be in the present, the future will take care of itself.
Yeah.
I like that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Very true and well said there.
So, you know, what state of mind do you want to be in? How do you want to be? And I figure, you know, I like Bobby because, you know, in her collection of aphorisms that she read a few days back, it was all about being positive and present and happy and helpful. And that's a heck of a good way to be when you're being present to all the things around you.
It really is. It makes you a happier and healthier person. You know, so very well said there. All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next poem, which is Way Shower by Eric Svensson, and we do have a recording for that one. So, Jean, whenever you're ready.
Way Shower. Wild whippersnapper waves beckon on distant shore, not unlike unruly teenagers on a crowded airport. Excitement spikes adrenaline for a new adventure. Vivacious laughter sparkles, dances like feisty white caps on distant shore. Wide wake of dream birth insists, mirage clear the vision clarifies, directs the dreamer to pay attention. Coelacanth dark remains trapped in nebulous sleep. Surreal manta ray glides upon hyperbole. Little book contained a huge bird, magna drawn to specific book at 9. Whimsical whippersnapper befriended a sky bird. Kindred spirits sprang from the pages, beckoned a landlocked farm boy to a distant shore. dream birth persists, resist not the residual cost. Mirage dances upon tessellated sky ladder, not unlike the sweeping staircase in a chorus line. Or was it, hello dolly, seek and dress reflected light trajectories. Jonathan Livingston Seagull, ever always Bible close. Untainted, untrained wings took flight. Little Holy Grail book and Neil Diamond. There on a distant shore, by the wings of dreams, through an open door, you may know him, if you may. Be as a page that aches for a word, which speaks on a theme that is timeless, and the one God will make for your day. Skybird still shudders, closer than distant shore. Wild Atlantic waves daily remind of whippersnapper dreams, not unlike a vision clearer, nearer than the living daylights. Audacious feathered alma mater and I still fly tandem, and we dance to a whispered voice overheard by the soul, undertook by the heart, and you may know it, if you may know it. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Eric. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. I have to say, I really liked this poem, and I really related to it. Obviously, as I was mentioning, you know, at the beginning of the show, I had read not all of, but some of Jonathan Livingston Seagull, because it was always next to my mom's bed. And so, you know, I find it so cool and interesting that he read it at a similar age, although he obviously read the whole thing at a similar age, which might, you know, be the obvious reason for his much more extended vocabulary than mine. But I did like how he mentioned that, like, the Jonathan Livingston Seagull ever always Bible closed, because that's kind of like looking back, like not in the moment when I was a kid, but looking back, I felt like that book was my mother's Bible, because it was always near her. And I really like how he puts a lot into a poem, but it always balances well. Like he's got in here tributes not only to the book, you know, but to the movie, and the song Skybird, which was actually our intro song for this show, because most of the, I think either all or the great majority of the soundtrack for the movie was written by Neil Diamond. So there's a lot of nice little nods in here to the artists, and also he lets us know a little bit about his life. And I think it's real, no matter where you live, the idea of being a child and dreaming about what else is out there is something that we can all relate to, you know. And whatever, you know, if you're something, you know, if you're, you know, landlocked and dreaming of those distant shores, or, you know, you're, you know, in the city and dreaming about what it would be like to stand in a forest, we all have those kind of those dreams of youth that we just kind of, you know, hope that we can hold on to and bring them to fruition. So I thought this was an excellent write and very well done. And Tom, your thoughts?
I enjoyed some of the images he created, like the colon cast out remains trapped in nebulous sleep, surreal manta ray glide upon hyperbole. The magic that he brings is also the magic of his own discovery. Little book contained a huge bird, and then we jump to beckoned a landlocked farm boy to a distant shore. But most of all, excuse me, what I love best in here is the be as a page that aches for a word, which speaks on a theme that is timeless and one God will make for your day. Because when we be, we suddenly become beyond description and beyond language almost. So the page, while both is blank, it is also completely filled. And we parse it by demonstrating our own freedom and our own magic. And that perhaps is what truly makes it us, who we are, simply by being. And I loved how he ended it with that quote from Neil Young's song, because that fits so well as an ending.
It really did. It really did. It was a nice touch. Excellent comment. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I always enjoy Eric's writing. I like how he kind of goes from, you know, wild whippersnapper waves on a distant shore, unruly teenagers in a crowded airport. You kind of go from singular as a kid to joining the crowd as a teenager, and then back to the landlocked farm boy in a distant shore. You know, so there, you go through these different stages where you're alone and you're part of the crowd, and then you have to separate back from the crowd to find out who you are and who you want to be and what the dream actually is. And I think that once you follow the dream, kind of as Tom was saying before on his right, you know, everything kind of falls in line in a way. Your actions, maybe, you know, when you're following what's right, and what's in your heart, you know, maybe your actions speak for themselves. So I thought that this was a great write overall and very well done.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like how you mentioned learning to separate yourself from the crowd and discover who you really are. So excellent comment there. All right, and I'm going to bring us to the next poem. And Cal, I have your poem up, so go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay, I wrote this in a hurry, so just bear with me. Possibilities. I remember my mom saying that can't died in the poorhouse. I never really understood what she meant until I became an adult. I realized she was making a point about trying your best to make goals and stick to them, that quitting wasn't an option without damn good reason. But I'd never succeed in life if I don't give it my all. Realizing there's a difference between excuses for not trying and reasons that make sense due to knowledge of a subject or even physical strength. I've always had an overactive curiosity about how things work and how our minds work. Knowledge is a powerful motivator. Curiosity seeks knowledge. I know I could have been so much more than I ever was. For one reason or another, my life went in a different direction than I had planned. But in the long run, I have no real regrets. End poem.
Oh, this is wonderful, Cal. I always think, I don't mind if you write poems in a hurry, as long as you don't read them in a hurry. And I have to say, you have such a nice reading voice. And I really appreciate and enjoy how you start this out with a quote from your mother. But before I go into more of my comment, let's go ahead and start with Dexter's thoughts. Dexter?
Dexter.
Yeah. Oh, he did. Okay. Okay.
Wait, he's back.
He's back. Okay. Awesome. Welcome back, Dexter. Did you get a chance to read or to hear Kel's poem?
Hey, could you give me 1 minute and I'll come back to it? Did everybody already comment?
No, I was going to call on you first. So
could you come right back to me?
I'll make the round and come back to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I liked how she started off with a quote from her mother and then explained how much she didn't get it until she grew up. Because so often we get great advice when we're kids, but we don't have the experience necessary to have it all be enlightening to us. And I'm sure there have been teachers in my own, and my parents in my own lifetime who were just like, how can somebody smart be so stupid or ignorant and not get it? Because, you know, what's obvious to them was not obvious to me. And I like how she brought that up. But I also like how she pointed out that if we're going to get where we're going, even when sometimes where we're going isn't very clear at all, we're not going to get there by giving up or by quitting, but by setting goals, working hard toward them, acknowledging the realities of the situation, but not letting them overcome us, but instead choosing where we're going to go and choosing what we will or will not do. I thought that was really well said. It was a good message.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I did like too, Cal, that you did bring up the idea that, you know, you didn't, it's when you're looking back, the whole idea of hindsight 2020, that you start to realize, you know, the lessons and how important they were. And, you know, I like how you really hit us with the stark reality of life, that oftentimes in youth we have this idea of who we're going to be, what we're going to do, how we're going to reach our dreams and our goals, and life kind of takes unexpected turns. So, you know, but such a positive attitude, you know, that idea of looking back and saying, you know, I have no regrets. So I love the wonderful personal touches within this, right, and I thought it was very well done. And Dexter, did you get a chance to read that and form some thoughts?
I really enjoyed this, and, you know, I think that, times change and, you know, eras change. And I think that this right captures that the way, your mom said, you know, can't die in this poor house. You know, I think that a lot of, you know, maybe the 30s and 20s and that older generations, a lot of their motivating factors, I think, were a lot of times such scarcity and such poverty, you know, that it's tough to imagine, and it's tough for them to imagine, like they were going to go forward no matter what, at all costs, and they were going to push forward, you know. But now, you know, and maybe in your age and everybody else's and stuff, it's finally become where knowledge can be a motivating factor, where we have kind of resources and we have different things where curiosity can spark you. I think that it's because of the hard work and things that are my grandparents, you mean your parents, or just everybody had put in, had given those possibilities, as you write here. But I thought that this was a very great write, and I think it captures that kind of difference in time era on motivating factors.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. And Jean, your thoughts?
No, I really enjoyed it. Let me pull it back up because I went and I had to get something else. Give me 1 second. Because I did write on it. What did I do? I thought this was nicely penned, Cal. Great thoughts to keep in mind, and I thought it was well done. And, you know, I put in there stick-to-itness. Because really, you know, that's what it comes down to. You know, can't die in the poorhouse. You know, well, if you keep saying, I can't do it, you know. You know, that's what it comes down to. You have to have perseverance and kind of stay with the with what it is you want and work towards it. And I think that that's kind of, you know, wonderful piece of advice for people to keep in mind. And, you know, it's good because every now and then somebody's got to write something that reminds somebody. And I think that's great. And, I think it was a nice job. And, I think it was a good take on that quote as well. So good work.
Thank you, everyone. I appreciate that very much.
Absolutely. All right. Up next, we have On Prevailing Winds by MK Rock. And I'll go ahead and give this a read. And it goes like this. Life rounds to square itself with and upon us, shape and circumstance triangulating ink position within Merrill's pulse, attending all here and now. Neither quill lines nor trace convention flown, swerve taps, inhibitions nerve, but a follow pendant's natural curve to bank on pinions. Breeze ripping gray tips off a fragile ruffle, satin dips to feathers, heightened skews, shutter speeds blink as red lights cue. Temporal glide gilds powerful expression, references of space and time owned by cirrus remote view of the obscure then and there. Cobalt gradations, plinking rhythms, horizon strings coaxed of earth and air connection, avian inclinations blown upon esprit currents known. Stratum rhymes chime, reality into zephyr crafted reaches, fingering calliope wing ferried, in that ideation wind beaten, galls sing that their hurried greetings in dangerous vocal flurries. Sky core sinks, scores, born of raucous, chortled themes, tawny shores rushed on surf tumbled dreams. That was just absolutely just beautiful use of language. And MK wrote to the prompt, which actually seemed to be one of more of our popular ones, overcome space and all we have left is here. Overcome time and all we have left is now. And Tom, let's start with your thoughts.
Give me a moment, please. One, because I need to go get a glass of water so I don't cough all the time. And two, because with Mindy, I need time to let it soak in.
Absolutely. I completely understand that. And I know that's probably most of us. I will go ahead and share my thoughts first, and that way everybody has a chance to kind of absorb. Well, first of all, the first part, what I really like how the use of triangulating ink position within Merrill's pulse, you know, I really feel that the Merrill, the pulse, it's a metaphor for, you know, what really drives us, what really moves us forward. And I like how this is relatable as anybody who's an artist or a poet in the idea that comes, what guides your ink, what guides your poetry is what is already there deep inside of you. Temporal glide gilds powerful expression reference of space and time owned by cirrus remote view of the obscure. Cirrus remote view of the obscure. I feel like there's that kind of, to me that represents the eye-opening moment where you allow almost like the kind of the scales to fall from your eyes. And you see not just with your eyes, but with your heart. And I like how she brings the gulls in at the end, you know, and mentions gulls sing their hurried greeting in dangerous vocal flurries. And I think that's a really important line. Well, I think all the lines are important, but so that one stands out to me because it reminds us that when we're all trying to voice our opinions at once, you know, when we're so busy talking and not listening, there's that danger. I really, and that idea to, and not a danger like that lives are in danger, but the idea that our humanity and our spirituality and our ability to love other people is in danger. So I really always appreciate and enjoy how beautiful and eye-opening Mindy's rites can be and are. So just a wonderful rite and very well done. And Dexter, would you like to share your thoughts?
Yeah. I really enjoyed how Mindy kind of captured that bird, you know, with its wings spread out. She really kind of captures the image of just a bird flying, you know, and going through the breeze and the bird overcoming that space. And she captures it in very well with overcoming time in the rhymes chime reality. You know, it's almost like that rhythm in between there is capturing perfect timing. So she really touches on both ends of the comment and on the picture and ties it all in very well. And also too with that gulls singing and those vocals, they really overcome space in a multiple ways with flying and spreading out, but also in their song. And I just think that she did it in a very uplifting and positive manner.
She really did. She really did. I like that. I like the idea of how you said they, you know, conquer time and space in not only the flying, but in their song. And I like that you brought up the chime and rhyme line, because I really just feel like there's a wonderful musical quality to that. So, well said there. And Kel, your thoughts?
I love how she used, sorry, I was on mute. I love how she used the metaphors of the birds, you know, the seagulls, all through this. But it has a wonderful message of, you know, just a continuation of life and acceptance and everything. It's just really a very airy, light, spiritual. It's just, it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful writing, and it's powerful and deep and enticing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wonderfully said there. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I love the opening line, life rounds to square itself with and upon us. The idea that we each live within our own created box, and yet life itself is constantly asking us to step outside it, to be more than just the boundaries we've created, shape and circumstance triangulating in position within marrow's pulse, attending all here and now. That if we stop living in our minds and whatever reality is creating, and instead become present within the self. I really like that. That's a very strong, positive opening. Very martial arts zen in its feel. And then she takes us through the clouds, the space itself, temporal glides, powerful expression, references of time and space owned by Cirrus, remote views of the obscure then and there. Because even once we have discovered how to set ourselves free and fly, it's easy to fall prey to reason's benign understanding of what was. So she takes us into how we have to be constantly reawakening stratums, rhymes, and chimes, reality into zephyr-crafted reaches, finger and calliope, wing-ferried on ideation, wind-beaten gulls sing their hurried greeting, and clangorous vocal furies to me flurries. And those last two lines, sky core sinks, scores born of raucous chortle beans. The laughter and the joy of sound, the laughter and the joy of flight. Tawny shores rushed on surf, tumbled dreams. We only awaken when we decide to no longer be asleep. And she sings to us of all that beauty that awaits us.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very well said there, Tom. Thank you. All right, and great comments, everybody. And let's go ahead and move on to the next poem. And up next is Feather in the Wind by Rich F. And Dexter, will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. Feather in the Wind by Rich F. And now I scream and swoop and soar. The winter wind is rushing through my frantic feathers. You can overcome. You will succeed, she says. Time to flee and fly from this failed, forsaken, run-down, ordinary place. And I cry in that eerie seagull manner. I know that's shying. Now can I escape this hollow, humdrum existence? Where my haunted heart lies bleeding on the floor. Where my haunted heart lies bleeding on the floor. For I am weak and feeble, skin and bone, broken, bloodied beak, and off-white feathers soiled, tattered and torn. I am weary from life's labors, no eternal escape for me. She beats her wings together in a sign of encouragement and mystic motivation. You can and you will. You have the wings and the starving of a starving seagull. But you have the heart of an angel, the strength of an enigmatic eagle, effervescence, energetic. You are a winner. Beat your wings. Beat your wonder wings. And so I fly. And so I flew all through the winter months, or snow-capped mountains, through rain-filled valleys, soaked and storm-tossed, until at last, I flew right into spring, flew right across the verdant vernal farms and fields, headed for the summer beaches and a new life by the rolling sea where I could be me. And soon I cried again for my protector and spirit guide. O cherishing, will you join me for this ride? For I have risen and conquered Gaia's space. And I have escaped from my miserable place, have flown for miles and miles in God's brave world to oceans new, my victory feathered flag unfurled. Now I wish to transcend through time and space, to cruise the universe to quite another place. And Shang responds, you flew the miles with physical strength and courage. Pushed your body beyond extremes and frustration and fatigue. This time your strength and bravery will come and within your spirit, your soul, your elan. You must believe, open your mind, and all is possible. And so my mind, my mystique, magic mind, my mystic, magic mind led me on that final, faded, fantastic flight of fancy and feral fantasy. My forefront focused on the cosmic kaleidoscope, twisting, winding wormhole with beating wings and my little trepidation. I emerged, blinking in my shadow shelter. I flap and flee, and with my mighty cry, I float helter-skelter, drawn now into a visceral vortex as through the wormhole, all skin and bone, into the astral unknown. I fly, end quote.
Great read there, Dexter. I especially like how you handled those F sound alliterations.
And
thank you.
Very well done. Yeah. And Kel, your thoughts.
Wow. Wow. This is amazing, absolutely amazing all the way through. I love the way he starts with a sort of spirit guide, you know, to give him encouragement and strength to get through the hardest part of continuing to another place and time. And then he finds his own strength to continue on. But I think he, let's see, with beating wings and a little trepidation, I emerge blinking from my shadow shelter. I flap and flee, and with a mighty cry, I float, helter-skelter. You know, sometimes you just, you think you can do something, and then you, like, run into a wall, and you just don't know where you are or where you're going. And, you know, I really love this. And then in the end, it's just all skin and bone into the astral unknown. I fly. You know, it's just a continuation. He's not giving up. He's going on no matter what. And it's just really rich and eloquently written. Really,
absolutely.
Really love this.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said there. I too like, I always appreciate his alliteration and his wonderful way of just weaving language together. And I did like how this was a spiritual journey of not giving up. And I like that he wasn't taking the journey alone, that there was a spirit guide there alongside him. So excellent write and very well done. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, you old guys have already said everything, but I'll take scraps on the plate here. I like the use of the spirit guide, Jiang, and the sense of we almost have to know defeat before we can understand and receive success. And that overcoming, the way he celebrates that in this piece, and so my mind, my mystic magic mind, led me on that final faded fantastic flight of fancy and feral fantasy. My forthright focus on the cosmic kaleidoscope, twisting, winding wormhole. It just becomes an incredible celebration. So when he comes to the end, all skin and bone into the astral unknown, I fly. It is truly a great celebration. And he does it beautifully by making good use of assonance and consonants and all the forms of alliteration that are available so that they build on each other and strengthen each other, just as he's claiming the strength coming to Jonathan Siegel. Very well done. Good use of craft and form to reinforce and develop the story that he tells so well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. And yeah, you're right. It does. He builds upon it really well. And I'm going to go ahead and move on so we can get one more poem fitted in for the night, and the rest will be carried over. I don't know where they'll be carried over to, but I'll let people know when I do. And up next is Clarity Amidst the Fall by Poetic Creations. And Kel, will you give that a read for us, please?
I would be happy to. Clarity Amidst the Fall by Poetic Creations. In this weightless environment, I jump to escape the fall. Though I have not wings, I intend on escaping darkness. The light of a thousand stars, they flicker on and off. There is no calm or serenity, only the broken squares. They hang slowly, drifting space, slowly descending, writing a forbidden orbital decay destined to burn. Consumed by an excretion disk was a sharp outer edge, but for now those crystal squares shine, so I focus on looking inside. and poem.
Great read there, Kel. I really like this one. I think even the title speaks volumes. PC is always really good at titles. Clarity amidst the fall. It's like sometimes we actually have to be falling in order to really have our eyes opened. I like the light of a thousand stars. They flicker on and off. There's no calm or serenity, only the broken squares. There's such a sense of being overwhelmed in that moment. I also really like, well, it's a great ride all the way through, but I do appreciate the ending where it says, consumed by an accretion did with a sharp outer edge, but for now those crystal squares shine, so I focus on looking inside. I think that ending line is so important that, you know, no matter what the trajectory of life is pulling you towards, what kind of chaos you're going through, you know, if you take that moment to focus inside and to focus on that light and that calm and center yourself, I think this is just a beautiful, thoughtful write all the way through and very well done. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought you captured it very well, Pam, and just the title, you know, Clarity Amidst the Fall. You know, the way that he just wrapped the whole thing up, I thought was very powerful and very well done, and just captured it in a very epitomized it. You know, he wrapped it up in a very good way.
Absolutely. Great comment. And everyone, make sure to leave written comments. I'd like to say I really have enjoyed this show. Wonderful poetry tonight. Great company. You know, and join us a half hour from now for at Midnight Bomber with Captain B, Neutron Bonham and Captain B2. They always have a great show. Thank you, Gene, as always, for being such a wonderful co-host and all that you do. Thank you to Tom and Kel and Dexter for calling in. Thank you to Robbie for being on the board. And thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Our show just wouldn't be the same without you. Such a wonderful night of poetry. And Gene, why don't you tell us about what we have coming up on Wednesday, tomorrow night?
Oh, tomorrow night we have Come Up and See Me Sometime. It's a bunch of quotes from Mae West. It's meant to be played. Fun, and you know, nothing wrong with a sense of humor on a sensual night for a change. And I thought maybe everybody have a little fun with that. And we are in need of rights, so anyone who wants to contribute, feel free. We'll be happy to take them. It looks like I have a bunch of other stories. I'm sorry, Thomas.
I said I'm working on it.
Awesome.
I appreciate that very much. It's a lot of fun in that. And I'm going to try and grab up some clips. I heard a couple today that were kind of humorous. And everyone, you know, join us then. And then after The Art of Seduction tomorrow night, we have the Black Lace Diaries with Mistress Frost and Master M. So feel free to give them a join, and they'll be happy to hear from you. And, you know, I know Victoria was looking for rights earlier today, so it could be fun. Anyway. Have a wonderful night, definitely. And thank you all for joining us. Thanks,
thank
everybody.
You. Good
great,
night,
great,
everyone.
Great prompts, Pam. Great prompts, as
thank
always.
Thank you, Phil.
And thank you, honey.
Bye.